All right, you're on the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
And Bravo.
Yay! He's here.
He's back.
Thanks to all of our patrons for supporting the show. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to continue the show, as well as allowing us the opportunity to serve our communities and yours with our Stop the Bleed programs, safety security training, things of that nature. So with your guys' support of the show, we're able to do those things because we do them for free, but of course, they still cost us. So thank you. Remember that if you're a patron and you have show ideas, please send them over to us, info@trainingaz.com. You want to hear about a certain topic? Almost all of our shows are listener requested. So we've got a pretty good lineup coming up, and all of those came from listeners. So the more you guys send in, the more we can do the shows that you want to hear about. All right, alumni for Independence Training. We have some still a couple of events coming up tomorrow night. September 20th, 6 to 10 p.m. right here at the schoolhouse. If you need the address, please send us an email, info@trainingaz.com. But tomorrow night, 20th, Tuesday, from 6 to 10 p.m., we're doing the digital privacy and security class with Privacy Mike. So that's going to be a great opportunity for you to come and get a free class from someone who really knows what the hell they're talking about and how to lock down your security. October the 19th, we're doing a meet and greet at Dad's Eatery. That's in Scottsdale. 6 to 9 p.m. We're actually going to run, walk, crawl, whatever it is you want to do at 6, and then social hour starts at 7. 7 to 9, that's going to be our meet and greet at Dad's Eatery. Come out, have a couple beers with us, have some good food, enjoy one of our favorite breweries and places to eat. November the 10th, we're doing video scenarios with Bob Schneider, who's going to bring out his TI video system for the classroom. Bob's a retired law enforcement officer out of Denver, lots of great experience in his career, and also he worked with the USCCA in developing training curriculum, so he's very, very knowledgeable about the things that he's going to be putting you guys through. That one has a small cost. It's $40. That's 6 to 8 on November 10th. Also at the schoolhouse, you can sign up for that one online. So those are the programs we have coming up. We're setting up some December and January stuff right now as well. All right, so a couple news stories that I want to talk about. And then we want to get on to Bravo's got the main topic today, so I want to give him plenty of time to do that. But a couple things I want to talk about. Probably the most hilarious thing that has happened in recent news. All right, I want to read to you guys a sign that is a literal sign on the island of Martha's Vineyard. Okay, this is an actual fucking sign on the island. I'm reading it to you exactly the way it says it. The island of Martha's Vineyard. We respect women. We value black lives. We stand with our LGBTQ community members. We stand with immigrants, with refugees, with indigenous peoples, and with people of all faiths. We stand with our community. And then it's got written in a couple other different languages, some various different things. And of course, for those of you guys who don't know, our wonderful Governor DeSantis out of Florida flew a couple of plane loads of the illegal immigrants from his state up to Martha's Vineyard. And in less than 24 hours, I think, they had decided that they were being overrun, overwhelmed, called in the fucking National Guard, and are shipping all the immigrants off to a military base where they will then be housed with federal dollars because they, and I quote, don't have the room or resources. We're talking about an average home in Martha's Vineyard is 5 to 6 bedrooms. As per the normal, these fuckers lie. And anyone who still believes the people on that side of the fence, you're just stupid. These people don't care.
Yeah, I think
they don't understand problems.
Wasn't it the average income is over $1 million?
Probably.
Yeah.
And they don't have the resources. They don't care. As long as it's over there, they care. But when it's right here in their yard, they don't care. And that's what Governor DeSantis is showing. And he's showing it more and more and more.
He's such a badass.
He shipped them all to freaking D.C., and now they have all these crazy crime rate problems, and they have homelessness problems, and they have all these issues.
Well, I mean,
and all these people are like,
and
these people are like, oh, my God, what are we going to do with these people? And then Governor DeSantis is like, yeah, I know, right? You know, like, this is a serious problem. He's not dehumanizing these people. He's saying this is a problem that you are not paying attention to. This is a serious issue, and it needs to be handled with a human heart. It's not being handled that way. We're being forced to handle it without that.
And a vice president that says there's the border is secure.
Unbelievable. Oh, it's insane.
Just, yeah, and then I think Carrie Lake is going to wind up being one of those other governors too. If she gets elected.
I thought Carrie Lake did get elected.
She's – no, the election is actually in November.
Oh, that's right, November. Yeah. That's right. Oh, she's got the candidacy spot.
Yeah. So – but I think she's going to be one of those governors like Abbott in Texas and DeSantis that's going to be like, yeah, we're not going to.
I have my doubts.
Yeah? You don't think so?
No.
Yeah.
I think guys like DeSantis are a rare breed. I think Abbott too.
Yeah.
I think you get two of those people for every 1,000 governors that you get.
Yeah.
Well, I think most people, when they get in that position of power and they start being influenced by money and special interest groups and everything else like that, they fucking cave. Because, look, I don't trust DeSantis or Abbott either.
Right.
The politicians are pieces of shit. They just happen to currently be doing something that amuses me.
Right. Yeah.
I find value in what they're currently doing. But I bet if you looked at a lot of their policies, you probably fucking wouldn't like them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you asked them to take care of you specifically as a resident of their state, they probably wouldn't fucking do it. Because they're politicians. And that's how that just goes.
Yeah.
You don't vote your way out of these kinds of problems. It just doesn't work. I want to talk about something that happened in our industry, and I wanted to bring it up because I think it's really important, and I had some kind of personal connection with this particular story. For those of you guys who don't know, Neil Curry was the owner of Ready Gunner and a couple other great projects up in Linden, Utah, and very – maybe not shockingly to people who were close to him. I was not close to him. I did not know him personally at all. I just knew his space in the industry, and that is it, all right? But watching him from the outside, everything appeared to be good. He has a beautiful wife. He has beautiful children. He has a booming business. He's well-known in the industry. He's well-liked in the industry. He's a good-looking dude. He's got a great resume, former 275 Ranger, worked for the government for a while after that, just great. Great dude. I took his own life on September 10th. And you ask yourself, okay, why did that happen? What? Obviously, there's 1,000 reasons that we'll never know because we weren't there. I don't know him personally. I'm sure people who knew him personally or were his close friends probably have some better answers, obviously, than I can come up with. But here is what I know. Following events like that, especially when someone kind of in the spotlight commits something like that, and his wife released kind of a statement that really tended to flow more on the fact that he was battling some inner demons from his time in the military. I just want to remind everybody who's listening, and this has nothing to do with veterans, okay? Because you guys know me. I'm not specific to that group. Check on your friends. Things can appear, just like Neil Curry, they can appear to be going very well from the outside. Everything can look like it's going great. But you don't really know how things are going. So check on your friends. When they say, hey, I'm okay – it's okay, bro. Don't take that as going, okay, cool, I don't need to, spend time with this person. Don't ask your friends how they are. Really check on them. Like, go have a beer with them or go take them fishing or, organize a fucking man date or whatever. Like, go really spend time with them. Go be there for them. Don't just hit them up with a message, hey, I love you, bro. That's not always enough to keep someone from putting a fucking pistol in their mouth. And I'll be honest, I was having this conversation with the guys from PHL Knives, and I'll say this, because I don't mind saying who I talk to sometimes about personal stuff, but anyone from our line of work, I think, knows what a fucking pistol barrel tastes like. As Michael Christina from Spotter Up would say, another guy who is great for conversation anytime you need it, hit that dude up. You can also find him through the account We Fight Monsters. But Spotter Up and We Fight Monsters are incredible, incredible accounts to follow. And I was talking with him the other day a little bit about this, and it's one of my favorite quotes from him is, and in fact, I'm going to read it to you guys because this I think is timely. And I'll tell you again that it this literal thing I'm about to read got me through some heavy shit one time. Most men that I've met are tragically lonely, but that is not the end of the matter. The trouble is that most men are able to take a heap load of pain, and sadly, that opens doors they probably should never go through. Just because a soul can take a lot of beatings doesn't mean his mind holds a lot of sense. The odd thing is his suffering is the one thing that keeps him connected to the world, even as it seems he's drifting away from it. Does it matter that some of his injuries are self-inflicted? If he can't find balance in the midst of his daily emotional disarray, he might be stuck in his paradox until the day he dies. So it's really important to do more than just say, hey, bro, how are you? Just checking in. It's easy to type back, I'm good, bro, with a fucking pistol in your mouth. All right? Really check on your people and keep them close. We don't need to lose any more Neil Currys. And anyone in our world could probably off the top of their head, I know I can, name at least one, if not a handful of people who, veteran or not, have taken their own lives because of demons that they're fighting. And more men kill themselves than women. That is a fucking fact. The stress and the burden that is put on men in the world today, more so than ever, is a very great stress. Sometimes when you keep your people close, you'll find that when you need them the most, this has been true to me, true for me on multiple occasions, when you need them the most, they will 100% materialize out of fucking nowhere and save you. But that's only if you keep your people close. So keep your people close. More than a text message, more than a phone call. Get on a fucking plane and fly across the country if that's what it takes. It'll be worth it. It's worth it every time. Couple news stories. One news story particularly that I think I want to talk about because I found it kind of crazy. A U.S. soldier got kicked out of the Army after the FBI says he enlisted to become better at killing black people. The FBI investigated a soldier and found the following. He'd been in contact with numerous accounts associated with racially motivated extremism. All right. According to our president, we're all racially motivated extremists, so whatever. He registered for social media with the email address name NaziAce1488, all right? That may or may not be just something that's poking fun at something or trying to be coy, but understand that like what your viewpoints are and the usernames that you use. I mean, what was the hilarious one from Kyle Rittenhouse? Four doors, more horrors, right? That was his hilarious like TikTok user account or something like that, which is funny, right? But like that came up in court. Now he's a child, but he had to fucking say that on court record and explain why four doors, more horrors was a freaking thing that he chose, right? I mean, just think about it when you're doing this. He posted, I serve for combat experience, so I'm more proficient in killing N-words. And he wrote the actual N-word. I'm not going to say it on the show, which is how you always know. There's a really funny comedian who says you can't say, you know, the N-word on the air. And it was being compared to him saying the word little people, because he was going to kind of make a joke about some midgets and he was going to say little people. And they said, no, that's like the N word. And he said, no. And I'll tell you how I know, because you're saying little people and you're not saying the N word. So that's how you know it's not a good thing to say unless you're like a rapper or whatever, I guess. All right. So obviously when he says something like that, now you know he's a little bit more on the racist extremist side of things. But here's why this is an important story, and I want to talk about this story specifically because of the class we have going on tomorrow night with Privacy Mike. We have all said crazy shit on social media for any variety of reasons. We've used crazy photos, we've posted crazy things, we've used crazy, you know, usernames, whatever. If things are taken out of context, anything can be framed to make you look like a bad person. You need, if you're in the area, please come by the digital privacy class tomorrow night. It's free, man, to alumni, all independence training alumni. Come by the class, 6 to 10. You need the address to the schoolhouse. Shoot us a DM on Instagram or an email or whatever. This is the kind of stuff. Now, obviously, it sounds like this guy really is kind of a over-the-top racist piece of shit, but that's not the point here. The point is how they connected all the dots was through all his social media shit. Something to think about. All right. We're going to skip news, get right to Dave's stuff. Redwire gear moment. Today, or this week, I mean, is going to be staging medical equipment within reach. It's better to have lots of small kits everywhere than one large kit over there. This is a concept we talk about all the time in training. I would rather have a bunch of small kits with some gauze, bandages, and chest seals in them than some giant badass M9 TCCC stomp bag 100 yards away or back at my house or in my truck or whatever. Stage medical equipment always within reach. Better have lots of small kits everywhere than one large kit over there. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Okay, topic for the day. Dave in the studio with us talking about what he's learned while learning and teaching with Independence Training. And I know he's got some great topic points here, so I'm going to let you roll, Dave.
Should I stay away from the butter thing?
No, no, no. We can talk about butter. I'm always up for talking about butter. Me and my 5 gallons of butter.
So as I was thinking about this, one of the things I wanted – I'm going to make a statement here, and it's not to boast about me. It's to boast about Independence Training and just what kind of an opportunity this organization provides. So when I came to Independence, got started training, I'm going to give you a list of all the training I've taken, received through Independence Training. I don't actually know. I'd have to go back and look at all of my certificates, how many times I've taken each of these courses, but they've all been multiple times. Half dozen times, who knows how much, but here's just a list of courses, right? Mm-hmm. Handgun, right? And all that, obviously there's basic handgun, defensive and advanced. There's carbine, all the carbine classes, practical shotgun, precision rifle, 1, 2, and 3, multiple, like, I don't know how many times I've taken that. Close quarter shooting, field carbine, structural movement, trauma medicine, invasive trauma, wilderness, IFAC, wilderness survival training, competition training, vehicle training of all kinds. That's vehicle. There's multiple courses in just the vehicle training. Proper equipment selection, equipment maintenance and repair, the law, oh my gosh, radio comms, hunting. And so when I look at all of these topics, right, there's been multiple courses and multiple training environments where all of that's been covered. And I've actually invested as much as I possibly could into all that stuff. I've taken all those courses, like I said, multiple times. On top of that, my family is trained with Independence as well in multiple courses and had multiple experience in that regard. On top of that, I've had the opportunity to be an assistant at now multiple military establishments and be able to train, you know, soldiers of all kinds in that realm. So from that experience, right, just learning all of that. So just from a sheer skill base, Independence has just been overwhelmingly important to my skills that I want to – and actually skills I didn't even know I needed until I started with Independence. I'd never heard of dirt medicine before I started with Independence, and now I teach it. So just opening up ideas and your mind to skills you didn't even know. So that's just the skills with regard to what's on the schedule, what's on the training list, right, on Independence website. So then we get into just some of the things I've learned, like what you guys learn every week on the Arms Room Show is, for example, one of the big takeaways for me has been a different perspective on the military in general. This topic was breached by Glenn and I 2 years ago, maybe, I'm not sure. We were at a CCW course over the pandemic. He was at my school, and I talked to him about possibly nudging my son towards the military. And I happened to mention the word because it's a noble cause.
let me stop you right there.
Yeah. So that led into a 30-to-45-minute dissertation as to what the military was really like, and it truly opened my eyes to things that I should have figured out on my own, but I just wasn't paying attention. And so it was really great. So that's another huge learning aspect that I've gained here with Independence. I think another aspect is more of a conceptual aspect is learning to prepare for the unknown, the unpredictable, the what-if scenarios. And you know, the way Glenn, you guys have heard him describing courses, it's like, okay, so of all the unlikely ways I might face something, what's the most likely and how do I fix that hole? How do I plug that breach and cover it through training?
Removing the variables is the concept we often use there.
Yeah, yeah. Whether that's in a protection environment, whether that's in a home security environment, whether that's in a self-sufficiency environment, off the grid, prep, whatever it is, right, is keeping in mind that, okay, I'm going out camping, I'm going out hunting or whatever. What are the variables I'm going to face that I'm not ready to deal with, right? And based on the years of experience of all of the team at Independence, I've learned a tremendous amount about how to properly prepare, and I'm still doing it. It's an ongoing dynamic process. So another area I think is super valuable for me is – or I guess what I've learned is how valuable it is to have this community, right? And I'm speaking first and foremost about the actual tribe of Independence training instructors and the very small group of those people. And something that I think we all come from different backgrounds, different careers, different histories, whatever, but we share some things that I think make it super strong: morals, values, ethos, loyalty, and friendship. And so because of all of that, this has become an extremely valuable part of my life beyond the training, that now I'm part of a very special group of people that I have extremely high value for. So
I think it's important to mention here that Dave did not, when he started first training with us as a student, he did not come in as an empty vessel. It's easy to as an instructor or as an educational organization, it's easy to impress people who have no basis of knowledge, right? Someone comes to a class and you just put them through some cool shooting drills, and they've never taken a shooting class before. They'll be like, wow, that was amazing. You guys are the greatest. And I'm always like, okay, I appreciate the compliment. What are you comparing me to? Nothing? Yeah, we're the fucking best. You know what I mean? Are you comparing me to somebody else? Okay, that's more important to me. Not because I need to be compared to someone else, but like, are you comparing me to someone that I really respect? Like, oh, wow, you think I'm at that person's level? That's fucking awesome, because that's someone I respect. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, yeah, I took a class with this other guy and all they did, this happened in class yesterday. Oh, yeah, I took this class and the guy didn't project his voice. I couldn't hear him. It was, you know, the guy didn't really care. He told a lot of stupid war stories. And then, you know, that was pretty much the end of class. And it was like, I didn't learn anything. I didn't get any better, you know? So, yeah, are you comparing me to that guy? Okay, you have some baseline to draw from. Bravo already came to us with years of martial arts experience, years of being a student professionally, years of being an instructor and educator professionally, years of doing private security work, executive protection work, site security work. You know, that's when Dave's talking about this stuff, he's drawing it from a mentality of someone who already had a ton to draw from and didn't quote unquote need us, you know? And the reason that this is important, the reason Dave and I decided to you know, bring this part of things up on the show is because everybody has the opportunity to expand and learn and grow.
Well, and that's yeah. I mean, I don't have any. I'm not wealthy. It's not like I have all the money in the world to spend on training, but it's always been an investment, and it's been almost a sense of urgency when I start to realize the value of the training that I didn't even know I needed. If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
And when you start to see it, you're like, wow, you know what? I need this training, and I should have had it yesterday. So I'm going to make this a priority, and I'm going to, instead of wasting money, invest money in, you know, a direction that's going to make me a more prepared individual. But along the way, like I said, there's also been intangible benefits, you know, intangible, valuable things that are part of this for me. You know, one of the things that I've also learned is that, you know, I can share my passion for teaching in other aspects other than combatives and hand-to-hand stuff. And that, you know, when I started this, you know, as you and I were talking about before, just like when I started martial arts, I didn't have any intention of becoming a teacher, an owner, whatever. When I started training with you, I didn't have any intention that I wanted to become an instructor and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Although, because of my past experience, when I did start with you, I started noticing the instructors and just how everything was presented, and I really liked, and I found out that I started cross-referencing. I'd use phrases you said in firearms class in the combatives realm because they crossed over. They were great statements. So I started stealing some of your stuff. So hope that's all right.
We all steal each other's stuff. No such thing as an original thought anymore.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I could talk for a long, long time about how much independence training has meant for me and my family. But I think the big thing for me is, like we spoke about earlier, was I so much of my life I can look back on and I can see where God had a hand in it. And I think God's got a hand in this too. And I think that there's I'm going to look back at this time and at some point in my life I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, okay, now I see it. Mm-hmm. Now I see why, you know, you connected me with this particular company, with these particular people for this particular kind of training. And because I've always been driven by passion. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also driven by how I'm made. And so following those passions, it's always led me to that same place where, you know, you literally just before we came on air stated that's your passion, that I want to empower people. I want to help people be better. And however we say that for each of us individually. And that's the driving force here. And that's one of the things that I also love is that there's so much in common between my belief systems and Independence's belief systems, primarily yours, but everybody else's as well. Because I look at the staff that we have and I see Jason in a job where he's, you know, he's helping other people, right? That's the focus of what he does, right? And looking at people that, like Josh, you know, he's spent a good portion of his life helping other people. So anyway, that kind of idea is, it fits right in line with what we do. Mm-hmm. That what I've always been exposed to and what I'm passionate about.
I think part of the, you know, one of the other reasons that David initially wanted to talk about this concept or these ideas was that it's a lot about finding the right people to be around. You know, it's hard to find like-minded people that really share your values and want to do what you do. I was talking with one of our daughters yesterday, and she was just like, hey, I think I finally found like my friend group. You know, and she's in middle school, right? So it's like fucking middle school. It's a drama central. But she's like, I think I finally found like my friend group. She's kind of been in and out of different friend groups over the years, you know, trying to find the people that fit her. I think I really found like my people, you know, because they're always hearing Drew and our kids always hear Drew and I talking about our people, our tribe, our family. They're always around them. You know, our kids are always around these other people. They're always around our friends. They're always around our instructor team. They're always around them. And so they get to see like, yeah, we have these close-knit relationships. We have these really tight, you know, bonds with these people. We go out with them in groups. We go out with them individually. We keep them close. We invite them to what we do. I mean, it was like when you find the right kind of people, like I was talking about earlier with, you know, even – really when you have to reach out during a crisis situation, but they'll be there when you need them. They'll be there when you don't know you need them. Yeah. And they're just there anyway. And sometimes they don't even know they're there, but they're there. They're just hanging out, chatting with you, doing your thing, going out, doing fun stuff with you, whatever. And you're like, man, I'm really glad this person's here with me right now. And they may not even know the impact that they're having, right? So that's, I think, part of it. The other part of it is what you've said a couple times already, and you said this before the show, and we were just kind of discussing the topic, and that was finding out what you didn't know and not being afraid of what you don't know. I mean, you, for a while in your professional life doing security, you carried a firearm.
Yep, for a decade.
With basically no real idea how to fucking use it.
And I never used it. That's why I stayed where it was. I'm embarrassed to even tell you what the holsters I used.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure. I'm sure
even the gun I started with.
Frown greatly. But what was that like to have that eye-opening experience to go from like, hey, I've been doing this for 10 years and I have been fucked up for 10 years?
Yeah.
I mean, how what was that experience like?
You know, it's one of those, for me, where I think I just – again, thank God. It's like, I'm just glad I never had, because I would have screwed a bunch of stuff up because I didn't know the law. I knew the law for my own individual area. I knew the law for the professional world of executive protection and also the professional world of event security and nightclub security and that kind of stuff. I knew that law, but I didn't know any other law when it came to firearms and or even self-defense necessarily. I had a little bit of experience, you know, over the years, but not not nearly to the extent that I have now, not only because I've learned it from you, but now I get an opportunity to teach it. So even more so that I'm tied into the law. And so when I look back on it, yeah, it was like, oh my gosh, it's the same thing. The same feeling I had when I got into martial arts. I lived a very violent childhood and a very violent youth, and I'd been in a ton of fights. I never fought another trained fighter.
Right.
When I got into martial arts and I started fighting trained fighters, I was getting my butt whipped on a daily basis. Mm. And so it was – I remember telling myself, and I still today, like, thank goodness I never met a trained fighter before I got into martial arts, because I would have been I've been cleaned up. So it's the same idea here. I look back, I'm
maybe
like –
maybe you should have, and it would have changed your ways.
But I wouldn't be here today, right here.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Well, and that's actually kind of a major point to focus on is the idea of, like, I'll quote, you know, my friend Josh, who's been on the show before, talk about law enforcement stuff. And one of my favorite quotes he said back when he was one of the head FIs for his agency, as he said, he trained officers in shootings and things like that. And he would say the reason that he believes most officers are alive today is because they never actually met anyone determined to kill them. Yeah, they met people who resisted. They met people who fought. They met violent people. But they never met anyone who was like, I am going to kill this person, right? They were not determined to kill them. And I think that's how most people are. A lot of people from the military, law enforcement, a lot of people who grew up in rough childhoods, a lot of people who kind of, you know, have that idea. They're like, yeah, well, I can hold my own because I've been in XYZ circumstances. And it's like, well, when were you ever up against somebody else of equal skill set? You know, who are you training to fight? are you training to fight a superior force? Most people are training to fight either a lesser force or equal force. They're not training to fight a superior force. You know, when I'm training to fight, you know, I'm training to fight three 300-pound Samoan dudes who want to kill me. You know what I mean? That's who I'm training to fight, because that's the worst possible freaking situations. These three massive dudes are just going to stomp the life out of me. Like, that's who I'm training to fight. At the very least, I'm training to fight myself. Not to say that I am anything great, but at the very least, I'm going to fight someone who is as good as I am at whatever it is we're doing. You know, so that's the lowest in my mind when I'm training. That is the lowest level of person I'm going to fight is someone who is at least as good as I am, all the way up to three giant 300-pound Samoan dudes who are fucking black belts and everything and are going to stomp the shit out of me. Like, that's
because you took their pineapple.
Yeah, yeah, they're very upset. So that's the way I think about it. is I'm going to be up against a superior force. I think that's where most people make the mistake. Is they don't think. I mean, I can imagine, and this is kind of where I want to go with this on the gun thing, but like when you're drawing that gun, how many people during executive protection, doing site security, doing all that kind of stuff, when you reach out and grab somebody, how many of them were compliant?
Not many.
Not many were compliant?
No, unless they were unconscious.
What was their level of resistance?
It varied, but it was usually mild at first until they found out why I was grabbing a hold of them. Mm. And then it would get more.
Did you ever get to the point where you thought lethal force was going to be an option?
Not within the realm of my professional.
Yeah, not within the professional right. life.
But right. outside, yeah, 100%. And there's times when I actually, knowing what I know now, I would have been justified in using lethal force in certain situations that I've been in. But I didn't because it wasn't even in my wheelhouse. I had a gun, but I didn't have it because it was just like part of the job. It was like, you know, and so, but I, and part of it may have been I'm sure it was a little bit of arrogance in my abilities hand to hand dealing. Well, I won't need, you know, so I guess part of it was that I just never even thought that it never became a tool that I was ready to use. And so even when times when I could have used it, I didn't versus now. After all this training, and very much like when I entered into combatives years ago, after 6 months of combatives, I started avoiding violence like the plague. It completely changed who I was inside because now I had a place to get rid of all of those alpha male, you know, ego crap. And then realizing too that, man, I can hurt someone. I mean, and I'm not trying to, it's not like a boastful thing like you're saying. It's just, I can. I have the skills, and most people aren't ready for someone like me. And that doesn't mean that I'm ready either. I avoid violence like the plague, because it's so unpredictable.
Well, that's the real point right there, though, is it's the puncher's chance, right? They don't have to be good. They just have to get lucky. All right. You have to do is, you know, slip on a curb or trip on a fucking rock or pull a hamstring. You look left and they're hitting from the right. Like, there's so many variables of someone doesn't have to be particularly good. I mean, look, if skill and knowledge alone were enough to win fights, we would never lose special operations guys, right? Because we give them, in theory, and I know the truth of this, but we're just going to play in the theory game for a second. We give them an incredibly higher level of training than, let's say, your standard conventional units, right? So why would we ever lose special operations to some Hodge in a man dress with a rattle trap fucking AK-47? Like, what? Because they don't have to be good. They just have to get lucky. The right place, right time, right circumstances, right amount of bullets in the fucking air, right? Recon by fire, you know, volume by actually by volume, whatever you want to say. Either way, it's not enough. Their skills and understanding weren't enough, right?
Right.
Because there's still always, anytime in a violent conflict, there's always that chance. So you avoid those violent conflicts once you understand how big that chance is.
Yeah.
Now, I want to change directions here a little bit because I know you only have a couple minutes here, but medical. You went for so many years doing all that kind of work and never even considered really medical stuff. To us and started working and training with us and everything. All of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is like a whole other thing I never even considered.
Yeah. And it was one of those, you know, situations where like – and to this day, I've never been in a situation where I've needed – that I'm aware of, or at least that I can remember, where I'm glad I had this medical training. But that doesn't – I'm still super motivated and I'm still very pushy on people to get this training because that day's – it could very well – it could come today. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is I honestly feel like I'm 100% ready, that if something happened, not only – I prepared myself as much as I possibly can without having the actual real experience – to be able to provide medical treatment and at a very high level. And so, but that's, it's just a matter of, that's a skill set I don't want to not have. Because what got me into the medical, what beyond just training with you guys, was thinking about my son being on the ground, bleeding out, and me not knowing how to fix it when I could have, when it was within my realm of training availability that I could do this. And it wasn't like incredibly expensive. I didn't need a 4-year degree. I literally come to a 1-day course and learn how to save my son from traumatic, you know, wounds that could wind up killing him.
And there's a risk mitigation factor there as well. Just like you talked about with the use of violence. You're like, hey, I had a gun professionally. There was probably even times I could have used it. If you would have known more about the law, if you would have known more about how to use the gun, would you have found yourself in those same situations? I'm betting no. Right. You probably would have done more to alleviate or remove yourself from those situations. Right.
Right.
The more you know, the more you want to be involved. It's like you said with combatives. You're like, yeah, the more I learned about combatives, the more I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to reach out and grab a hold of a fucking Cecil Birch. You know what I mean? Like, here's a dude who looks like, you know, an insurance salesman. Right. I always give him a hard time for that. But it's like, here's a guy who looks like a soccer dad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's a badass motherfucker. Like, Cecil's a violent, capable dude.
Right.
And you reach out and get I doubt someone's ever going to reach out and grab a hold of one of our team, right? If it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Mason. Story.
No, it would be me.
I don't know. No. You're scarier than Mason.
It'll be Mason, yeah. It'll be Mason.
But like my friends, I'm like, I think about all my friends. I'm like, man, no, they're probably not going to fuck with them. I'm like, okay, Cecil has a very good bearing. Cecil, like, you know, he definitely looks the part. He acts the part. He's, you know, when he's out in public, he's aware and all that. But I'm like, I just so badly just want to get a phone call from my friend Cecil one day and just be like, dude, there I was in the parking lot. The guy reached out and grabbed me. You know what I mean? He's in 18 different pieces now. You know what I mean? Like, fuck yes, finally. Someone fucked with Cecil in public.
We'll have to buy him some new bounds.
Yeah, we'll get the blood. We'll have to buy him new ones. We'll be covered in blood. But I'm like, my point being is that, like, because we know so much about that world, we're less likely to be involved in it. Right. We're less likely for someone to want to reach out and grab a hold of us, the way we present ourselves, where we go, how we act, what we do, what we look like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to the point where it's like, yeah, if I'm not going to necessarily – I don't really want to be involved in a violent conflict because I know the possible outcomes. I know where this might possibly go.
Right.
And so I don't want to be involved in that. Whereas a very younger Glenn was way more capable and of being involved in a violent conflict because I didn't understand all of those. And the same things with you, you know. So it's the same thing with like medical. There's a risk mitigation factor there. Combatives, there's a risk mitigation factor. Shooting, there's a risk mitigation factor where that's why we see like when we do corporate medical training, their accident rates always decrease. Because once people realize, oh yeah, this shit would kill me in a few minutes. I've been doing it for years. Maybe nothing's happened yet, but that doesn't mean nothing's going to happen today or tomorrow or you know 10 weeks from now. I probably should stop doing this so that I don't end up in a bad way where I need these skill sets now that I understand them.
Well, and then again, on top of that, you start to ask the right questions. And you, and almost like it's almost illogical. If you're coming to independence training for firearms training, why? What are you expecting to happen? Mm. And if you're expecting to have to use your gun, what does that mean? Like, what's the other person doing? Mm. Well, they're clearly threatening you with lethal force, and in whatever way, you know, all the different ways that could happen. So, what's the likelihood of you getting possibly injured by that person
who came to you with lethal intent?
Right. Yeah. That's the reason why you're carrying the gun, and yet. You never thought, and I never thought of, well, what happens if I get shot? What happens if I get stabbed? What's the point of learning all of this great stuff if you end up dying anyway, even if you did defeat the person? And so it starts, you know, start logically thinking about that. Like, yeah, why wouldn't? I mean, this, and quite frankly, as we've experienced using medical far more than we hear about firearms being used. And so,
or just combative skills and tools in general.
Right. Yeah. Defensive. Yeah. 100%. And yet what we find, not so much with medical, but definitely with the other aspects, is we find that those are some of our least attended courses, is the courses of the things you're more likely to deal with.
Those are more benign things. I think people get more fantastically amazed by things, right? People want to come to the class. They want to come to the combatives class. I know you have to deal with these questions all the time from students where it's like, what's the one punch where I knock someone the fuck out, you know? And you're like, okay, let's talk about the fact you're overweight. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you haven't even shown me you can throw a punch, much less am I going to show you the super secret Dave Bravo combination that fucking disembowels you, right? Like, no, I can't teach you that because – you're not even ready for the most basic level of stuff. But people always want to do the super sexy stuff. Right. You know, they walk in your place and they see a katana or a bow staff or something. They're like, I want to use that. And you're like, listen, guy, you're still figuring out how to tie your shoes. I'm not going to give you a fucking sword. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing with shooting. People want to, hey, I want to, you know, when's your next night vision class? And I'm like, you should probably attend a basic handgun class because I've seen you on the range, you know? So there's a lot of people want to attend the high speed cool stuff because it's the most fun. But they often forget that, yeah, man, it's the software skills that are critically important. I mean, you saw that. You know, in any arm structural movement class you know that you've either taken or taught with us, where everybody's just like, when does the shooting start? You know, because they get tired of doing the dry runs of, you know, searching versus shooting and depth and angle and all the other stuff that we have to work on in a structural class. And it's like, look, man, I know you want to get to shooting people. That's cool. But if you don't do this correctly now, then when it comes time to shoot people, you're just going to die a lot.
And they do.
And they do over and over and over and over and over again because they do the techniques incorrectly.
And it's an eye opener for them. And then so they start paying more attention to the pieing.
Because you're like, ultimately, this is a risk mitigation thing. We're teaching you how to do this technique because it mitigates risk. This search technique, this, you know, depth and angle game, this mitigates the risk of you having to use this other skill set based on, obviously, context of situation. But so I think risk mitigation is a huge part of as you have learned and developed and you've done this stuff professionally, you've been combative professionally and personally, you fought people professionally and personally. Now you can look back on it and say, wow, I probably could have avoided some of that shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, like most of the stuff that I ended up dealing with personally was after the events were over. And I'd go to my car at 2, 3, 4 o'clock, or not like 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And the people that I kicked out 3 hours, 4 hours earlier are still hanging around or waiting for me or whatever. And so it never dawned my mind that, hey, I could call law enforcement and have them walk me into my car.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to do that. I'm a man.
You know, or just having like one of the guys, you know, have some of the guys that I actually hired to stick around. You know, it's like, now everybody wants to go and get on, you know. And so I ended up being the last guy out. And yeah, so just really, you know, I really do feel like I've had the hand of God on me, you know, at so many times in my life where I, like car accidents and things, you know, where you like, I should have been dead, I should, you know, and too many things that I look at. And then I look at where I'm at now and these additional skills that I've learned are like, risk mitigation. I don't want to avoid violence like the plague. So that if violence finally does come to me, I'm so prepared that I've got literally layers of defense, whether it's in my house or in my just whatever. I've got my verbals. I've got my combatives, my hand-to-hand. I've got my non-lethals. I've got my lethals. I've got all of these different levels I can go to.
And post to that, you've got medical. You've got
right.
USCCA protection. You've got understanding of the law. You know how to talk to people. You've got a great group of, you know, network tribe that's going to back you up and give you a place to stay or a fucking extra gun or whatever, right?
Well, and that's the thing.
All that is like a whole – like you said, it's a whole layer thing. It's not like, yes, I could fight a person.
Right.
Okay. There's so much more to this than just that.
And that's been – obviously – independence has brought huge chunks of that to that whole process. But I think, you know, one of the things that – just to close this part out for me is I love just this inner group of guys. I believe that I could call Jason, who I don't know very well, not like you obviously do, but I believe I could call him and say, man, I'm in a real – I'm in a nasty spot here. I could, you know, and I think he would help me. Mm-hmm. I think I'd call Josh, who I don't know as well as you, but I have a feeling he would be right there. I could call Chris and be like, man, I'm hung up here. I need, you know, and I think, you know, I call Mason. There's just people I that I don't even know that well, but because we're all part of this community that you've built, I think we all share, I don't know, like a borrowed loyalty, you know. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's a cool feeling to know that you're with some very capable people, and that if things go down, that you got some good coverage.
It wasn't easy to find for you, though. It took you years. It took you commitment. It took you hard work. It took investment. You had to get into the training world. You had to spend some money. You had to spend some resources. You had to try other people. You had to find us. There was this whole process. It didn't just fall in your lap. And that came from – and that's why I mentioned earlier, not just an empty vessel. That came from you already being in good physical condition. You were already in good mental condition. You've already squared away some of your demons, right? None of us have squared them all away, but you got some under control, you know?
Yeah.
You've already working on personal relationships. You're already – continue to work on yourself. I think that's the important thing is it came to you because of the zone process that we talk about, right? You were building zone one.
Right.
That's why you found zone two, zone three, you know, because zone one was being built. You're not just out there with a fucked up zone one, you know, yourself looking for, I need a better community. I need better family. I have friends, whatever, right? You're like, yeah, but you're fucked up. Like you were already working on that. That's how you found this. And that's kind of, I think, what the main point I want to get across to listeners for this show is Dave's talking about all this cool stuff with independence. Look, Dave's been a huge asset to us. He's been a huge asset. He's an incredible educator. He's incredibly knowledgeable. There's nothing that Dave doesn't want to learn. There's nothing that Dave doesn't want to participate in. I'm like, hey, you want to go teach some military guys? And he's like, yep. I'm like, hey, you want to go teach some cops? Yep. Hey, you want to go teach some kids? Yep. Like Dave's always in to go and do the work and put in the effort and learn alongside. Even if he's like, hey, I don't know that topic very well. What do I need to do to get spun up on it? How many classes do I need to take? What do you recommend doing? Who else should I go train with? Like all of what Dave's been able to accomplish with us came because of his personal work, effort, and sacrifice that he put into getting to that point.
And I'm no one special. Anyone can do this. It's not – it's just a matter of
– that's true for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like this is – I mean, we look at people and we're like, well, that person's – they're just different or they're
– he was born into it or he had this.
I don't know.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not – I mean, yeah. This is – I don't – you know, same thing I can tell my students. It's like – it's just a matter of consistency over time equals success.
Well, thanks, Dave, for sharing your thoughts with us, man.
You bet.
So thanks to Dave for talking with us about his experiences and learning and training and expanding his mind. I hope what you guys drew away from that was our intent, which was to really promote self-introspection and kind of where you're at in your current skill sets and your understanding and your preparedness level and where you could still potentially go so that you're improving zone number one, and then that will help you find the right zone two and zone three things to work on. And a lot of people are always looking for, you know, some type of meaning to life, so to speak, or some kind of driving passion, some kind of thing they can commit themselves to. And a lot of times you got to start by looking inward first and build yourself, and then the things that you want to do will suddenly become available to you. I know that's certainly how it's gone in my life. Independence training moment for this week. What did Drew and Glenn do this past week to better prepare any of the four zones for an emergency? Drew and I actually got to celebrate our one-year anniversary. And within our one-year anniversary for being married, we've been together a little bit longer than that, but for actually being married, it put some perspective, I think. I'll let Drew talk to this on from her perspective, but from my perspective, it really made me look at, you know, what we've experienced and what we've gone through and the mistakes that we've made and how I can improve as a husband and as a partner for zone one. Again, I can't be a great husband to my wife unless I am a better version of myself. It's not an outside thing I do. I can't just be like, okay, I'm going to be a better husband. What the fuck does that mean? I have to be a better Glenn in order to be a better husband. I have to be a better myself before I can go out and make my, you know, be better for my partner. So for me personally, you know, it gave me some time to reflect and think and based on our vows that we made a year ago and then a year of life since then, I was able to also add to those vows and promises and commitments to Drew to kind of add to things just based on growth and development and change, which I think is important. So that's what I did. What do you have to say about that, Drew?
I would – yeah. I mean, it's really just looking at the last year of what we've done and what we've accomplished, where we've grown, where we have maybe even slid backwards a little bit. It's just like more of like a self-reflection. In kind of recognizing our strengths and weaknesses, reevaluating them and going through and – obviously trying to be the best that we can be for each other and for the growth of you, growth of me, for us growing together.
That zone one is so critical. Dave talked about it, you know, a lot. We're kind of lightly touching on it here, but so many people want that better meaning in life. They want that mission. They want that goal while not necessarily looking inward and asking, am I even ready for that? Am I even prepared for this journey that I'm asking to be put on? So, Independence Training Moment brought to you by TrainingAZ.com. Easy to find us over there. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@TrainingAZ.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Redwire Gear, PMA Scottsdale, and MRC Phoenix. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Next week, we're going to be talking about how many magazines do you really need to own and how many do you really need to carry? Such a fun topic. We got some great questions. Had a couple of listeners actually send us in some show ideas about this topic. Both of them, interestingly enough, were related to their observations of what's happened in Ukraine. So really interesting stuff. I'm excited to talk about it. Until then, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.